Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 107. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and on this Sunday, I'm pleased to be joined once again by my partner in crime on SteelersDepot.com, Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday, Dave, and it's finally over. Man, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
I tell you, it certainly was a whirlwind all the way through. Trying to track those undrafted free agents last night. We'll get into a little bit more of those later on in the show and all. And glad it's behind us now, but we have a lot of work still to do, don't we?
Absolutely. But yeah, you're right. You know, you messaged me last night during the UDFA period. It's crazy. It's madness for an hour straight. It's just I'm just sitting there refreshing Twitter and just trying to look for names.
Yeah. And before we get going, a special shout out to you. You did a fantastic job during the pre-draft process. Matthew Marksey, who has been with us forever and a day, he doesn't write draft profiles, but I think everybody who visits Steelers Depot on a regular basis, they wake up to a lot of Matthew Marksey's stuff every morning. Mm-hmm. He continues to be kind of, we call him a machine because that's what he is. Andy Miley, fantastic work. Josh Carney, fantastic work. Daniel Valente, fantastic work. Michael Reynolds, who kind of writes, off the cuff kind of pieces, absolutely fantastic. David, how do you pronounce David's last name?
Orchetta, something
yeah,
like that.
He goes by Beaver Falls Hosiery at Subburger on Twitter. Another big contributor for us. Another name people don't know about, Spencer Crick. Helps me out with a lot of audio stuff, and probably doesn't help me out enough. Sean McCaveney, former college quarterback, did a lot of great write ups for us during this process. I think I mentioned Josh Carney. Am I missing anybody there?
No, I think it's everyone. Yeah, it was a great job. We had, I think, 178 total draft profiles, and the way it turned out for the Steelers this year, we immediately, had scouting reports on 7 of the 8 picks. The only exception, of course, the long snapper, like you said, sorry guys, no long snapper scouting report upcoming.
We failed our listeners and readers, didn't we? Everybody will be demanding refunds from their subscription dues that they paid. No, in all seriousness, I think that you and I kind of every year go into this thing saying, hey, we probably shoot for 200. If we don't get there, that's fine. But let's just try to make sure that we're able to identify at least all the draft picks. And realistically, we did that this year. Once again, great job by you guys. And well, let's start getting in. I know you've had your videos running on the site. Great job on those kind of instant reactions and all. But for those people that maybe haven't seen those, I know David and I already gave our thoughts on what happened in the first 2 days of the draft, but I want to kind of recap and start at the top of the draft, and let's go through these guys and get kind of your thoughts on them. First, T.J. Watt in the first round to the Steelers. I don't think it was a huge surprise. I had him in my second to last mock draft. I overthought the process as usual. Didn't stick with him, but you had T.J. Watt going to the Steelers in your final mock draft. Talk about, I hate to use, they always say when you do interviews and all, don't go talk about, but I love to use that. Talk about T.J. Watt, Alex.
Yeah, that's journalism school rule number one, Dave. You're breaking it over here. Breaking the rules.
Yeah, along with what other ones?
fair point. Watt is not a surprise in the least, and I'm excited about it, but I also think it was a pretty predictable pick. And as soon as Green Bay traded out at 29, 9 with Cleveland, I thought, okay, the Steelers have a great shot to get him, and he's going to be the guy, because Green Bay was the guy everyone was saying would be the most likely to steal away T.J. Watt. And then today, you know, I posted the interview that Missy Matthews did with Watt over on Steelers.com. And, you know, we found out Keith Butler was at the Wisconsin Pro Day as well and had dinner with Watt. So you had Colbert, Tomlin, Porter, and Butler all there, all having dinner with him, all working him out at his Pro Day. I mean, that just screams interest. And, you know, he's a good athlete. And I'm right there with you with what Tomlin said. And I noted this before the pick, is that even though he's, you know, inexperienced, a one-year starter, he's not as raw as he should be. He's got better hand use than you'd expect. He plays to run better than you'd expect. His run fits are a little better than you'd expect. He's still got some issues there. You know, he'll show some poor technique at times. But I think just the accelerated development he's had is pretty uncommon for the position. So I'm excited about the pick. You filled a need. You're going to get immediate play time. He's a good athlete. He's got a high motor. I think he's got the right attitude, mentality for this defense. And it's just what the Steelers want. You know, they want athletes. They want guys that can cover the entire field, whether that's an Artie Burns, a Ryan Shazier, a Sean Davis. There is a very clear type they're looking for on defense, regardless of position. They want guys that have upside. They want guys that are hyper athletes, and guys that can basically line up anywhere on the field because of the athlete that they are.
The good thing is he's played on his feet. We heard Colbert talk ahead of the draft, talk about how hard it is to evaluate some of these guys, especially the defensive ends that had their hand in the dirt. Well, the evaluation with T.J. Watt had to be a little bit easier because of the style of defense that he did play at Wisconsin. You know, look, only a true one-year starter, although he did start seeing some time in 2015 on the defensive side of the ball. He's still learning the position. So, you know, I think that's upside there. I think his ceiling, he still has a ways to go to reach his ceiling. It did look, you know, at times as though that he's thinking more than just playing. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, it'll take a little bit of time to get past that. But regardless, he's still a player that we expect to see on the field at some point, you know, probably almost immediately during the 2017 season.
Yeah, no, I think he's right away. I think the way just draft picks and rookies are, if you're your first, second round pick, you got to find ways to get him on the field. And I mean, he's going to rotate with James Harrison. There could be a 50-50 split just because you don't want Harrison to play so much that he gets worn out, even by Harrison standards, by season's end. So I think he's going to be an immediate guy. I think the upside is immense. There certainly is. You know, he's going to have to learn the NFL system, and you know, just going from 1 year starter in Wisconsin to the NFL is a big jump. There are some concerns about him against some of his technique. You know, I saw him try to wrong arm a guard one time, and he totally failed at it. There is an injury history, of course, so you do, in the back of your mind, have a worry about long-term longevity with those knees, which have been a problem. And he's going to take his lumps for sure. But I think anytime that you're a great athlete and you play with great effort, it's going to mask some of the issues that you're going to naturally have coming into the NFL.
I want to kind of rewind here for a moment. We were talking about our draft profiles. Now, obviously, we're not NFL scouts. We're trying to get better and better each year. But, you know, I thought it was an awesome video that Steelers.com posted on their site, talking to Chidi and Phil Kreider, mm-hmm. and a couple of those other guys. Do we need to kind of focus even a little bit more on what players do well as opposed to what they stink at?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was Phil Kreidler that talked about that. Dave, I know you've mentioned it in the past. I've talked to some ex-scouts, friends of mine, that, you know, they say that's what you need to focus on. And that's why I think I always try to look at these a little on the optimistic side, not, you know, totally blind about it. But, you know, I put on a little rose-colored glasses because you want to see how these guys win, because everyone's going to help you out somehow, some way. You know, how do they fit the scheme, and how can they, you know, help you win? So while we certainly will talk about the flaws and the faults of a guy's game, the emphasis should be on just how they win and how you can mask and overcome maybe some of the weaknesses a player has.
Do we need to change? You know, we like to use the headers, the good, the bad. Do we need to go what he does well and what he needs to work on? Is that probably a
I think it's the same. I think it kind of means the same thing.
More PC. Obviously, we don't. You know, you don't want to take a Homer view with each and every prospect that you break down. But I think it is fair to kind of highlight more what a player does well. And then it's important to note what they need to work on as well. But I mean, look, I mean, guys in the seventh round definitely aren't equivalent to, they do more things well than guy, you know, or not as many things well as guys, you know, drafted in the first few rounds. So I think, maybe we'll learn a little bit of something, this year again, and can apply it to next year. So, moving into round two, I was a little bit surprised. I think I told David the other day, I thought if the Steelers went wide receiver in the second round, it was going to be Chris Godwin, out of Penn State, based really solely on outside what we saw as interest in some of these wide receivers and where we thought the ones that they did show interest in would ultimately get drafted. We had no clue whatsoever really that Juju Smith-Schuster out of USC would be in the Steelers' sights. How surprised were you by the pick? And now that you've had a little bit of time to look over his tape, talk about the 20-year-old who just so happens to be, I think, the youngest player in this year's draft.
The position didn't surprise me. If you look at my final mock, which granted was pre-Martavis Bryant reinstatement, I had a receiver going in the second round. I've been talking for a while now, put receivers higher in your mock drafts because of all the interest the Steelers showed prior to this past weekend. So the position did not surprise me. The name, yeah, that was a surprise just because, and Smith-Schuster admitted it himself, he barely had any communication with the Steelers. He met with them at the combine for 15 minutes, and that was the last he heard from him. No major things at the pro day, no pre-draft visits, so that was a surprise. But it definitely makes sense. Again, you look at young guys, the Steelers like to target guys that have high upside, that have a game to grow. When they get their second contract, they're still pretty young. He'll be, 24 by the time he's able, to get his second contract. Those are the guys that they like. And honestly, Dave, meet your starting slot receiver week one. And this is it. And Smith-Schuster, because second-round picks don't sit. Not in today's NFL. And assuming Martavis Bryant is able to stay on the straight and narrow for at least this year, he's going to be your Z. AB is obviously your X. And I think Smith-Schuster is a really strong option in the slot, who's a bigger guy than Eli Rogers, of course. That's more of a yak threat, more dynamic, more physical as a blocker and going over the middle. And as much as I like Eli Rogers, and he's a good story, and he played well last year, and he's got a spot on this team, he might not have a spot in that starting lineup too much longer.
So you think, give me a percentage chance that Eli Rogers might not make it this year? I mean,
make the roster or start?
Make the roster. Would you put any percent chance on him not making the final 53?
Low, real low. I'm pretty confident he'll still make it. There's going to be a big battle here at receiver, and I don't want to start calling anyone locks. I think David Todd framed it well, that basically the only locks are AB and Smith-Schuster. Anyone else is still, really got to compete for that job. It's going to be really fun to watch him go at it in training camp. But here's what impressed me about Smith-Schuster was he's 20 years old and he's got the feel and the football IQ of a 5-year NFL veteran. His ability to find grass, his ability to work in scramble drills, his toughness and willingness to go over the middle. I mean, heck, I was praising Sammy Coates this past season for his ability in scramble drills. And, he's got a couple years under his belt. I look at Smith-Schuster and I go, this guy's 20. He's able to, stay in the cone of vision of the quarterback, make tough catches. He's got experience in the slot. He's a very willing blocker. He's physical. He's got all those traits in the slot receiver. He might not be the twitchiest guy, but he's going to get on the field. And if it's not going to be at the X, which it isn't, and if it's not going to be at the Z, which probably isn't, it's going to be in the slot.
And your post was excellent on that. And plus, look, he's only 20. He's going to get he's going to fill out maybe a little bit more. He's going to obviously get stronger in an NFL, in an NFL program. Hopefully that football IQ is there and he can absorb stuff quickly, from now until, the training camp. But I'm with you. I mean, you don't draft a guy in the second round that you're probably not going to put on the field. I envision envision maybe him cutting his, and look, this is a guy you can play on special teams too, right? So, gun to my head right now, I'd say, look, okay, maybe he's not your starter week one, but, you know, first quarter of the season, getting some snaps here and there, logging some time on special teams. I think it all depends on him, how quick he's able to pick this stuff up. Obviously, if he's got it and is your best option, you trust. That's the big thing is when can he be trusted? You know, when Ben Roethlisberger makes these checks, or when he sees something across from him that's a hot read. That's your biggest fear, I think, when it comes to these young wide receivers. So, I expect him on the field at some point during the season, sooner rather than later. I'm not ready to pencil him in as a week one starter yet, but I think there's a lot to work on. And boy, y'all have already gotten back into his tape some. It sure would be nice. When are we going to have an all 22 college service so we can see this route running? Yeah. And see just how much what happens when the football's not in his hands. But a combative catcher. What do you think about the not that they mean amount to the hill of beans, but the measurable comparison I put up with who was it? Nuke Hopkins.
Well, if he can become DeAndre Hopkins, then I'll be happy, and you should be too. Every Steelers Nation will be. I thought the numbers were interesting, how close they were. You pointed out, the measurables were kind of close. I think Hopkins is still a little bit more dynamic, even if the testing is similar. I think it makes sense, and Smith-Schuster is able to win contested footballs downfield. I think he does a good job to stack cornerbacks, even if he doesn't have that elite speed. If he can be half of what Hopkins is, though, I'm happy.
Not elite speed, not a guy that's really going to burn you over top. But, I mean, the more you – look, speed sometimes isn't everything. If you can get off the football – I mean, Antonio Brown is a perfect example of you can't judge a player by their combine numbers,
Right, so, right. And Smith-Schuster is a vertical threat because he has the physicality. I think he's got good timing on his vertical and the hands and body control to make those contested catches down the sideline.
I hate to throw this out there, but late last season he did play with a quarterback that kind of reminds you of another quarterback, right?
Yeah, a little Big Ben and Sam Darnold. So yeah, he was a guy that the play was extended. You have to stay in the cone of vision, work back to the football. If you're if you're short, go long. If you're long, come back. I think he's starting in the first month of the season as a slot receiver.
All right.
Minimum.
All right, let's move on to a kid that you know a little bit about from going to Mobile, Alabama to the Senior Bowl this year. I think one of the very first, first profiles I think you did this year, right? Cameron Sutton out of Tennessee?
Yeah, something like that. It was pretty early in the process. It's a pretty good pick. Maybe not my favorite slot receiver. But it certainly makes sense when you hear him explain it as a guy that I think that can really cover man-to-man. Dave, are you ready for some more man-to-man this year? Because the Steelers are.
Yes. And I think we'll be writing a little bit more about that based on what Carnell Lake said when he was introducing Cameron Sutton and talking about the pick to the media there. It's evident that this team's going to have to play more man. And, even though he wouldn't say, okay, Cameron Sutton's – I think he qualified Cameron Sutton is what he said. He's an outside slash inside cornerback. But I think right now I think both of us would be probably surprised if they don't probably give him kind of a first crack at inside, right?
Yeah, that's where my head's at too, because if you were going to play him outside, can Kako play inside? I don't really think so. I think you keep it as is. So my guess is Sutton will have the versatility, which is nice. Steelers pride versatility, but I think he's going to be nickel.
I think the biggest thing that sticks out, and of course, college coaches are always going to gush over their own players, but Carnell Lake did it as well. Now, we had this guy, I think, kind of a similar discussion back with Duran Grant, how smart a player he is, but Bob Shoup really, really talked highly of Cameron Sutton, even though I think he only spent 1 year with him in 2016, talking about this this kid, you'll never see the kid, I forget the exact quote, you'll never see him lined up wrong at all. He's a communicator. He knows not only where he belongs on the field, but where everybody else belongs in the field as well, too. That sounds like another cornerback that currently plays for the Steelers.
Yeah, a little William Gay. Is that what you're getting at, Dave?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, a little less physical, but definitely that hub of communication is really important. And, Sutton has 45 starts in the SEC. I kind of looked at him as a poor man's Trey White, and you know I was high on Trey White. This is a guy that's taken his lumps. I think he does well, and you mentioned this the other in the last podcast, Dave, and I thought that was really important. His ability to recover, his ability to get back in phase in man coverage, because you're going to get beat sometimes. These receivers are tough to cover, especially in the slot if you're covering one of these shifty receivers, Edelman's and the like. He's able to get back in phase. He plays with good technique. He doesn't seem to panic when he's beat. And he's able to play the pocket. He finishes catch points really well, which for me is huge because quarterbacks aren't throwing to you. They're throwing to the receiver. And when you're in the NFL, the accuracy is unreal. So it's hard to break up a lot of passes. It's hard to take advantage of poorly thrown passes because they don't happen too often. You have to be able to play the pocket and finish the play at the catch point where the quarterback wants it rather than you being able to find the football and make a play and or whatever the case is. And I think Sutton does that well both in man and in zone.
Obviously they ended up taking another cornerback later in the draft, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. But at this point in the draft, if you did not know what happened the rest of the way, what was your first thoughts about the cornerback room?
In terms of what?
Well, we know Sutton is going to be on his 53-man roster, right. but what about the rest of the guys on the depth chart? Who's biggest risk here? Obviously, Cinquez Golson was before this draft even started. David Todd continues to think that, William Gay, maybe we've seen the last of him. Are you ready to throw William Gay out with the bathwater just yet?
No, not yet. But I'm not with you, and I'm not completely confident that Gay's gonna make this team. I think it's like receiver where you're gonna have a lot of competition, and we're gonna have to really sort some of these things out in camp. A lot of it's gonna be about the development of these young guys and how they come along. You know, how does Sutton react to his first training camp? I don't know. It's similar to receiver. But, yeah, Golson is on the outside looking in right now, and he's going to need to have the camp of his life, which starts with just having a camp because that hasn't happened yet. But I don't know how this is going to shake out. I think it's going to be the most interesting things to see.
The thing is, you have Cody Sensabaugh, who, I think it'll be a surprise if he doesn't make the roster, even though he's best suited to play in the slot. He can play outside as well too. Now I hate to go Bob Labriola Steelers.com chat question here, but I think it's a question that can be asked. The Steelers didn't draft a safety.
I think they're going to keep six corners this year. They're going to go 6 and 4. Like they keep 10 DBs total. You have your four safeties. You didn't add a fifth. So I think you keep six. So I haven't done the math, but that's going to open up that extra spot.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this is, could we see William Gay maybe experiment a little bit more with some center field?
Maybe, but I'm not even. What's his role going to be? He's not going to get on the field, though. I guess he's a pure backup. But.
Yeah. I mean, all around backup. I mean, William Gay too. I mean, even at his age, I'd still be comfortable with him on special teams, to be quite honest with you. I mean, he's that physical of a player. Just one of those thoughts that I think is going to be asked now that you have this full cornerback room and you have an experienced veteran in William Gay. Look, I'm not married to William Gay. I think he got a raw deal halfway through his career. There were a couple years there that. He was the Steelers' best cornerback. Now, take that for whatever you for whatever it's worth, because this team has had problems drafting cornerbacks over the years. But even all said and done right now, it's possible that William Gay's played his last down in Pittsburgh, but these young kids still have a lot to show, and really the same goes for Cody Sensabaugh.
Right, yeah, I can't say, it's similar. There's only a couple of locks. There's Artie, Cockerell, and Sutton, I think, are the only locks right now. And I think you just throw the rest of the guys in camp, let it compete, and see how these young guys do and go from there.
what would you like to see? What you know, I hate to focus on the negatives, but what don't you like about Cameron Sutton?
I do want to see some more aggressiveness, a little bit more physicality. He's a slighter frame. I get that. But if you're going to play in the slot, you're going to be, you know, heavy in the run. You're going to be involved in the run fits on defense. You're going to be used as a blitzer. So a little bit more physicality would be nice. He does not have that elite speed, which you don't always have to have. But, you know, if you get matched up against, you'll say they move a number one receiver into the slot, like, you know, offenses are trying to do. AB gets moved to the slot quite a bit. Does he have the speed to catch up? You know, those are probably my two big concerns with Sutton, the lack of elite speed, and I wish he was more aggressive, a little more physical as a tackler.
All right, on to the compensatory pick, the second of two picks in the third round. I got this right, as did 40,000 other people. I think not the right round, though. I was, you know, I'm so unsure what round, you know, where James Conner and his value was. I knew what kind of player he was, obviously, but where does a guy that's not, you know, not super, you know, elusive, if you will, more of a power back than he is a shifty back, obviously, a guy. But, you know, you heard David Todd and I talking the other day about, look at all those long runs that James Conner reeled off, despite all that, you know, at the college level there. You definitely weren't shocked that James Conner was the guy, right?
No, not at all. A little higher in the round than I would have liked, and as much as I root for James Conner, like everybody else listening, and happy he's a part of the team, and his story's fantastic, I'm viewing him as a prospect, because that's what he is. He's a Pittsburgh Steeler. He's here to help the team win, not to be fawned over for the great story. And I thought it was a little bit, you know, too high of a pick, and I have questions about Conner as a prospect. You know, he's not a plotter, but he's got a little bit more explosion and speed than I thought, but of course it's not great. I think he's going to be fighting his height at 6'1". I think he runs a little too tall because he is a tall guy, and he's got to lower his pad level a bit to maximize his power. So the pick made sense because, you know, obviously what team knows James Conner better than Pittsburgh? No one, because, you know, he's in the facility every single day. They like their backs big. I kept saying from the get-go, if you're looking for a back for Pittsburgh to mock, go big. Good guys, 225-plus, and Conner's 233. So they like those big power backs. And obviously, you know, he was brought in for a visit because he's a local guy and he's an easy guy to evaluate. But I do have some questions about him as a prospect, and he was not the top running back I would have taken in that scenario. You know, Samaje Perine is a name I might have rather had.
Yeah, I think a few other backs were still on the board as well at that point that, you know, you probably could have seen them taking. You know, I think they reached maybe around there. But look, I mean, they had him ranked high on their board, and definitely know him better than probably most NFL teams, you know, out there. So I envision him more as a power back, obviously, short yardage a guy that can come in and kind of wear down defenses, hopefully late in games when the Steelers have the lead and save some wear and tear on Le'Veon Bell. It's going to be interesting to watch James Conner's career go from here. I think a guy that they talked about, I think Colbert did after the draft wrapped up, that this is a physical kid that they're not going to have any problem probably throwing out there on special teams as well, too, and he's going to have to do that.
Right. Well, that's I'm glad you brought that up, Dave. I was thinking about it last night. Where on special teams does he have experience running down kicks before? I guess I didn't watch enough Pitt games.
Yeah, we'll have to. I haven't gotten that far in the evaluation process. I would think kick coverage.
I guess. I mean,
up back on kickoffs or something, maybe.
Because I looked up his stats real quick, which is not always a great indicator of special teams, but he didn't really have any tackles, like one or two, which probably happened on offense after a turnover. 233 is pretty big to be on special teams, and he's not like a super fast guy. Obviously, we're not talking a return game, so I saw some stuff that Pitt was thinking about playing on special teams early in this past year. So, you know, if you're a Pitt fan, let me know, because I'm honestly asking. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Does he have experience there? Because, I mean, I guess I could see him playing some special teams, but, I mean, 233 and not a super fast guy,
Yeah, but we're talking about a team that had David Johnson running down kickoffs, right? But you know, what spot was that? I mean, I'm not, you know, by no stretch of the imagination should anybody think this is gonna be a core guy,
right?
You know,
well, that's what I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, David Johnson, he didn't run down kickoffs. That would have been too far out there.
David Johnson has in the past. Run down kickoffs.
This past year?
No, maybe not this past year, but he has done it before. And what? Matt Spaeth has as well, hasn't he?
Well, Matt Spaeth was on the punt team, which for a long time, which wasn't a great idea. But yeah, I mean that's I think punts and kickoffs maybe a little different.
Okay, well, we'll see. I might have my facts wrong, but I sure seem to remember David Johnson being on the kickoff coverage team a couple of years. First time. You know, so, okay. You know, that's probably what's going through my head. You know, what's left to say about James Conner? I mean, a guy that didn't catch a lot of balls, obviously, but probably wasn't used or expected to be used in that situation as well. So,
yeah. And just to tear up a bow on it, I mean, I'm all for Conner playing special teams. You got to get on the field somehow. It was a little weird that Colbert was super excited about it. Like, I didn't know if I was missing something that Colbert, it was like one of the first things he said, you know, I'm excited about Conner as a running back, but I'm also really excited about him as a special teamer. And I sat there going, does he have a resume on that I'm not aware of? That was just my thing.
I'll try to track down and see how many total snaps he played. I'm sure it's out there. Okay, another guy that you know, once we accepted the fact that the Steelers were going to draft a quarterback, when did you and I finally come to that? About 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago?
About 5 minutes before this podcast. I finally accepted it.
Look, there were one of a few that we had circled. You know, you get further into the evaluation, you start seeing a little bit more of who Joshua Dobbs is as a person. It's no surprise that the Steelers drafted Joshua Dobbs in the fourth round.
Correct. Made a lot of sense. We knew it was either him or Kaya. Kaya ended up falling. We ended up being kind of off on the evaluation. You know, big picture globally, most media guys thought he'd go higher than he did, sixth or seventh round in Detroit. You know my feeling on it. And, you know, Art Rooney goes to talk about the pick and says, you know, he's not the heir to Ben. So what is he, Dave? What's the upside here? What's best case scenario for Josh Dobbs?
I think he's another arm in that quarterback room, a guy that you hope can become the number two as soon as 2018. I think that's where they are on him. And if you get anything more from him, I mean, this team has drafted Omar Jacobs before in Brian St. Pierre, right? I mean, you need guys in that room. I think Colbert laid it out nicely. You don't know which guys are coming out next year, you know. But with that said, you know, isn't there another veteran out there that you could sign to a one-year veteran minimum deal? I'm not down on Joshua Dobbs, the player or the position, the player or you know, overall tape. It's just he is what he is right now, and to me, looking at what he might become, I know everybody wants to put him in this, oh, he might be the next Dak Prescott, you know, but let's and hopefully he is, right? You know, but this guy needs a lot of development.
Yeah, and I just think it's tough to do that when you're sitting on the bench. You know, if you're going to be the number three, which he is, that's already set in stone. We have our quarterback room. Ben is the starter. Landry Jones is the backup. Dobbs is the number three. And Zach Mettenberger looking for work. That's the way the depth chart's going to be. But, you know, obviously in practice, you're going to get very few reps. The number two barely gets any time. Number three is going to get maybe some scout team and, you know, minimal reps running his own playbook. Obviously, on the field, you're going to get a lot of time in the preseason, but he might play more than Landry Jones played in the preseason a couple years ago, just because you don't got to get a look at Landry, and Dobbs needs the experience.
I was about to go that same way. I said he could break Landry Jones' offensive snap participation record. And I'm going to tell you what's going to happen is Joshua Dobbs is going to make a few plays as a preseason quarterback, and oh boy, people are gonna want Landry Jones really gone at that point.
For sure.
But yeah, I think we'll both be surprised if Dobbs Look, I mean, he's going to be game day inactive, we think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's just they're going to be looking for a quarterback again next year, I guess. If they feel like Ben only has 1 or 2 years left, I mean, you're going to start this process again next year, I'm guessing, because if they don't view Dobbs as the guy, and that's probably a correct assessment, then you still have to think about your long-term franchise quarterback. And so I just don't get the pick. I think at best he's a Landry Jones, but he's going to be even tougher to develop now, and you're going to be looking for a quarterback maybe as soon as next year. So I throw my hands up and say, what's the plan with Josh Dobbs? And I don't see that. I don't see a plan.
Well, obviously, Mettenberger's time is short now. Jones, even though he signed a 2-year deal, you're not married to him past 2017. So I guess my I'll play whatever cop you want me to play here, good or bad. The fact that you take a fourth round flyer on a guy such as Dobbs, and you have a year to for Randy Feitner and Todd Haley to get a as good a look as him as they can during the preseason and training camp to see if there's see what the ceiling might indeed be with him. And regardless, maybe you do go into next year's draft and try to strengthen the quarterback room once again with another. Boy, you want to talk about people really hitting the fan then. Fourth or fifth round, pick again. So something you and I have been against pretty much the whole process. We accepted the fact that they were going to draft a quarterback. I'm to that point now. There's no sense beating it and to death from this point forward and saying awful pick or whatever, because everybody should have known it was coming. So now we'll just wait and see how wrong Joshua Dobbs can maybe prove us.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to talk about Dobbs as the player, because it's fair to him, we don't want to talk about just the position. I think he has that leader and character traits that you need at the position. I think he's a guy that makes the room better, elevates the play of the guys around him, and is a guy that's easy to coach, easy to work with, and easy to love. He's got everything off the field, and it's not just because he's an aerospace engineer. I mean, that's awesome. That's a very cool story and good for him, and it's going to help him very much, in his post-football career, but it's beyond that. It's not what you do in the classroom or what your major was. It's just the way he carries himself as a professional. You posted the Gruden QB camp, and I thank you for that, because I love that. It almost made me say, yeah, draft a quarterback in the fourth round, because the first thing he did in the Gruden QB camp was give Jon Gruden the check to FFCA, because he met him a couple years ago, and Gruden gave him an FFCA shirt, and Dobbs researched what the charity organization was, and he loved what Gruden did, so he gave him a check. I mean, who's ever done that before? Easy guy to love, and I think he's got that off the field makeup to be a quarterback. He's erratic on the field. He is too inconsistent, but there are some traits there. I just think it's awfully tough to try to develop a guy like that.
All right, let's talk about what he does well. He does have a stronger arm. I thought Randy Feitner was great. An elite arm like Ben Roethlisberger. I wonder if that was sort of a jab at Joe Flacco, kind of. Randy, I don't think Randy intends to take jabs at anybody, but it sure stuck out to me when he used the word elite talking about Ben Roethlisberger's arm. He talked about how Joshua Dobbs extended plays at Tennessee. Obviously, Joshua Dobbs is a athletic quarterback. Boy, how many rushing touchdowns did he have?
It's a lot. I forget what the number was.
But a guy that if something breaks down, he can. A guy that, and I think we saw this on the quarterback camp, right? A guy that you have to spy.
Mm-hmm. That what was it? One plug was the play Gruden drew right up there. I remember that.
And wasn't Jared Davis on the other side of the football, in that? So look, he's not awful. He's got some things that he does well. Now it'll be up to getting him under center more, which Randy Feitner talked about. He has, I think, was it Feitner or Colbert? Has some under the center experience, but a guy that what else does he do well? Let's end with a positive note on Joshua Dobbs.
I think he's a tough guy that keeps the play alive, that has the right makeup for it. So there's certainly some baseline things to work with. I don't want to totally dismiss Josh Dobbs.
All right. Round five, Dave T. strikes. Talking about him on that podcast, talking about Brian Allen, the long cornerback out of Utah. That made us hurry up and get a draft profile on Brian Allen. So you've already looked a little bit more at the tape than I have. What do you see in this long kid, former wide receiver?
Well, I think what you see is what you get. I mean, he's 6'3", 215, with, I think, 34-inch arms that runs, high 4.4s with a great vertical. I think he's this guy. Again, you talk about the transition of man coverage. These aren't your Dick LeBeau corners anymore. We want guys that can play man-to-man. So it might not be the most physical or the greatest tacklers yet, but you're willing to sacrifice a little bit of that for guys that have the speed and athleticism to carry a receiver, down the seam or down the sideline. And I think both of these guys, Sutton and Brian Allen, are able to do that. I thought Allen even held his own against John Ross. I saw a little bit of Washington last night, and he was able to was a corner route they ran, and Allen was able to stay step for step. So, he's got that size to engulf smaller receivers downfield. He does a nice job to stay, in a hip-to-hip relationship with the receiver downfield and find the football and finish the play. He's a former receiver. He's got good hands. He has the length, to break up passes. Those are his ball skills. He's got the hands to finish the play. So he's raw. His run fits have got to get better. Kind of similar to Artie Burns last year, actually. But I think he's a willing tackler, even if he's not a great tackler yet. And if I'm looking at a corner, as long as you're willing to do it, you don't have to be the greatest. But if you have that desire and want to, I can work with you. If you don't, then I can't. But I think he has the willingness to play the run and tackle in space.
Here's what, and maybe this contradicts a little bit, maybe what Dave T told us. I had to go back and listen to that for a 13th time. But Carnell Lake said, I talked to him at the combine. I did not see his pro day workout, but fortunately, most of the pro day workouts are filmed, which we look at those things. I thought his tape for the games that he started as a corner looked good. Like I said, I think with some more games under his belt, I think he probably would have been drafted a lot higher based on his measurables, his physicality, his ability to play the deep ball, etc. He goes on, he was asked on what he can do with a long cornerback. Carnell Lake says, well, it depends on him, but Brian has shown the ability to get up in a receiver's face, and he's done a good job of pressing the receivers and disrupting receivers at the line of scrimmage. That goes back to us talking about this team wanting to play more man again. A guy that's got a 35-inch vertical, and he's 6'3", and I think Allen actually increased that vertical at his pro day as well. He's a good jumper with good ball skills. It's going to be tough for guys to throw that over his head. If his technique is good, which it is, and he continues to improve, it's very difficult for these quarterbacks to get one in on the deep ball, especially if they attack it. And that's what Brian gives you right now. He gives you the ability to disrupt at the line, the ability to play the deep ball, and he's fast enough at 4.49 to stick with most receivers.
Yeah, that was a great evaluation by Lake, and I love the point that he said it's going to be difficult for quarterbacks to find a great placement for the football, whether that's downfield or I think red zone football. I think goal line fades. Oftentimes the aiming point, on the goal line is going to be the back pylon or on top of the receiver's helmet, and Allen's just going to engulf these guys and really take away any sort of spot for the quarterback to throw to with his length and his height that he has. So now if you're a quarterback, you might have to throw that back shoulder, the back shoulder, kind of comeback, red zone play, which is a tougher throw to make, and it's going to disrupt what the quarterback wants to do. So, Lake said it about disrupting receivers at the line of scrimmage. Obviously, that's going to help him man to man. It's also going to help him cover too, which the Steelers ran more than anybody else did last year. And so I think this defense is going from the Dick LeBeau cover three fire zone core, which they were 90% of the time, to much more of a cover two / man coverage principles. There's still going to be some LeBeau, some cover three, and some fire zones in there, but I think the more dominant concepts are going to be two man, cover two, cover one. And I think Allen is able to do a lot of those things that the Steelers want to change schematically.
And it makes sense with what they're doing here, too, because it used to be one of the Dick LeBeau principles with playing off so much was don't get beat deep. Well, now you're a little bit more susceptible to getting beat deep. You know, if you're going to be playing cover one, cover two, more. So you need guys that can recover like Sutton. You need guys that's going to be tough, hopefully, if they're in their hip pocket and staying in phase, that aren't going to get beat that way. So you need to kind of protect yourself. If you're not going to, if one of your mottos was to play off, but don't give up the explosive play, well, now you're setting yourself up maybe a little bit more to get beat over your head, and that's kind of why they've gone the direction they have with these two corners.
Yeah, I think it just shows that organizational shift in philosophy, which isn't even really a Tomlin thing or a Butler thing, you know, because neither of them were super heavy man backgrounds. You know, Butler obviously coming from, you know, studying under LeBeau, and Tomlin coming from the Dungy Carson tree, which weren't really man, you know, they were cover too heavy. But, you know, as close to the vest as the Steelers typically are, when it comes to the draft, I feel like they're an open book. Because, you know, what did Mike Tomlin say at league meetings talking about the Patriots game, which I think spoke to a more global issue? We got to get better with our four-man rush, and we got to be able to play more man coverage. So what do? They draft two outside linebackers, one in the first, a flyer in the seventh, and they draft two guys that they can play man-to-man. I mean, you listen. You wouldn't have to watch Steelers season at all if you listen to Mike Tomlin in that moment, and then anything Art Rooney says, you know what the Steelers need. It's pretty funny to watch it work.
Absolutely. Okay. When here we go. We're moving past. You want anything else? You want to wrap up on Brian Allen?
Real quick on him, because, you know, it's interesting. His short shuttle was terrible, and his three cone was really good. I did see some stiffness on tape. Very, much better in a line than he is trying to change direction. So as the outside guy, vertical plays is where he's going to be at. I want to see any of those double moves and any of those in-breaking routes of how he changes direction, because I do see stiffness, and expected at 6'3".
A little bit older guy. With him.
Yeah, he's what, 24? 20, how old is he? 24, I think?
23 or 24, right? I'll have to look up.
He's at least 24, I think.
At least 24? Hold on, man. Let me double check here.
It's a little bit of a downside, but.
He's 23. He'll be 24. He's 23? I have a birth date of 10/21/1993. So okay. He'll be 24 in October.
Okay.
With him, but I mean, you listen to his interviews. He sounds like a mature kid. Doesn't sound like not a kid really. You know, young man at this point in time. At that age, I think he's already got the kid. As I said, he comes off mature, if you ask me. Not a guy that I think that you're going to have any problems with. And now he's got to just focus on trying to make the final 53-man roster, and a lot of that's going to probably have to do. Carnell Lake was asked about special teams with him, and these guys don't like to step on each other's toes whatsoever. If it's and Carnell Lake would not even touch that because he doesn't handle special teams. So it'll be interesting to hear if Danny Smith, next time we hear from Danny Smith, which we thought we were going to do.
I was hoping. That's the only reason I like this next pick.
In the sixth round. That didn't happen. But Brian Allen, a guy that you think is going to have to show that he can contribute on special teams. In the sixth round, the Steelers drafted, all right, let's get over this now, long snapper Colin Holtby out of Louisville. Now, I thought I read it wrong on the screen. When I thought NFL Network got it wrong, I had to look at it like six times. It's our kind of job, I think, A, to both poke holes in this pick and sell it. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Dave, for the honor of having to sell a long snapper. It was funny. It was the only pick, I think, that I didn't see get tipped. Like, I didn't see it on Twitter. I didn't see you grab it or someone else mention it. So, you know, I'm watching NFL Network, and it has a Steelers selection pick is in and all that. And, you know, they hang on that for like a minute. So you're just staring at the screen waiting for it to turn over. And then it turns over for a long snapper. I just had to laugh at myself. Like, are you serious? But a couple things. I think Holtby was the best long snapper in this class. And I had that article from Patrick Manley. He was a former long snapper for the Bears who thought he was the best snapper and had the most upside, if there is such a thing, for a long snapper. He was at the Senior Bowl. Teams like his length. He's got rare length for the position. I remember I think it's probably Wednesday down at the Senior Bowl. I was sitting in the lobby just by myself. I was eating some dinner, and a scout came in with Holba. And, you know, the first thing he told him was, you know, we love your length at the position. It's pretty rare. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. He's got the size, which Colbert talked about. I thought that was a really interesting and nuanced point that Colbert said. You know, they like, you know, usually long snappers in college are pretty small because you don't have to, you can't cover them up, and they don't, you get to hit them. They're not really involved in the blocking protection too much because of the way college football rules are. So Holba at, what is he, 6'3", 6'4", 250, 248 to be exact, you know, it kind of breaks that mold. So I think he legitimately was the best long snapper. I think he was going to get drafted. But in the sixth round, no, don't do that. Ugh, I mean, I'm a special teams guy, and even I'm like, that's too early.
Yeah, and Colbert, after the draft was over, he says, Colin, not many long snappers come along that we believe are draftable. New England took a kid a few years back who is their starting long snapper, and when we see one, we want to add him to the mix just as we would any other position, provide competition for Greg Warren. Certainly a fit. Colin certainly fit that bill, and that's why we pulled the trigger when we did. With him. Now, later on, he was asked, and you kind of talked about what Colbert said. I thought Colbert did a good job of explaining to us why this was the kid and why they probably used a six-round pick on him. And he says there are different rules. Most long snappers are walk-ons, and because of the rules, there are different rules as to how you can defend them or block them after the snap. They have a lot more liberties than we do in the NFL. So a lot of the college long snappers are the 6'1", 215, 220-pound guys, which we really would have a hard time snapping or blocking in the league. So Colin, he is really 6'3", 248, and he has some coverage ability. Not that he will be the first line of defense, but but he has the size to go along with the snapping. Again, not many come along that are that size who are competent snappers. It's really a supply and demand issue. It's no secret Greg is moving into what we believe is his 13th year. You have to be able to back that up. And sure, we signed Greg, and this will be competition for him, just like we have competition at other spots. We have drafted guys in the 6th and 7th rounds that don't make the team, and maybe they are practice squad types. So the competition will be there. If he makes it, he makes it. If not, I don't know if he would... I don't know if we would have a guy on the practice squad, but we certainly just wanted to have that option. As these guys come along, there aren't too many draftable long snappers.
Yeah, that's kind of the distinction, though, is, yeah, I get that obviously not all six-round picks makes a team, but most of them at least make your practice squad. And Holba's a boom or bust. Either he's going to make the team and be your starter over Greg Warren, or he's not going to make the team entirely. So there is a difference, and I think Colbert ran into that difference as he was trying to explain it. Here's the other thing on that. Is Greg Warren healthy? Is there something we're missing? Because Colbert got asked about, you know, point blank, is Warren healthy? And Colbert's answer was yes, right now. What kind of an answer is that? Yes, right now.
Yeah, that's a reason for pause. He says yes, right now. Yes, right now. Yes. Like I said, we're going to provide him competition. We'll see where it goes. I don't know.
Could you imagine, Dave, if I asked you, is that your wife? And you said, yes, right now, yes.
Well, actually, if you did ask me that question, that would probably be the appropriate answer for me. Look, I'm married to a saint, and at any given moment, it could be former. But, yeah, I get where you're going right there with that answer, and it does give you reason. Look, I mean, he sure would as hell made us feel a lot better to say, look, something's wrong with Greg's knees or back or whatever, you know. Then we could say, oh, okay, yeah, take the best long snapper then, and hopefully he spends the next 10 years with the Steelers, you know. So
right.
It's going to be interesting. Maybe, I don't know, I'm trying to find this. I didn't have my tinfoil helmet available for today's podcast. I didn't think I need it, but maybe there's a little something there with Greg Warren. And look, I mean, how much longer can this guy? I mean, this guy is the Debo of long snappers at this point. You know, the good thing about Greg Warren during the season is we're not talking about Greg Warren, but sooner or later, the wheels start to come off.
Sure, and you know, it's a valuable position. And obviously, we saw what happened, you know, without Greg Warren, you know, that Giants game where James Harrison came in and disaster ensued. So it's a valuable position and one you want to get right and one you want to have complete confidence in, and not one, as a special teams coach or, you know, head coach, you never want to have to worry about. You never want to hold your breath on the crucial punt late in the game or the game-winning field goal that snaps off by any measure. It's all about precision. So I don't downplay the value and the importance of the position. I just, the sixth round was surprising. But we'll see with Warren. You know, Devin Smith for the Jets just tore his ACL and he's out for the year. So guys get hurt. We're at the time of the year. Guys are getting back in football action and freak things happen. So I don't know if it's that. I don't know if he's thinking about retirement or what. I don't know what's going on. If there's some off the field things. I mean, Greg Warren's seemingly extremely high character guy, so I couldn't imagine any sort of, you know, issue off the field, but who knows what's on the horizon. That'll be interesting to see.
All right. It's obvious they took him in the sixth round because they didn't think he'd be there in the seventh. They thought he's draftable. Mm-hmm. They thought if they wanted to get him, they were going to have to take him in the sixth. Sure, they could have signed six undrafted long snappers if they wanted to, but this is a guy. We'll just, you know, it's easy to sit here and throw darts at it right now. So, you know, if he makes the 53-man roster and Greg Warren doesn't, then is it a good pick?
I think he's got to get on the field and prove himself. I think if he's on there and has a really good rookie year and a guy that you feel can be here for 10 years, then sure. So I don't know if him making it alone is going to be an indication of a good pick. He's got to prove it. What the Cardinals had a guy who's on the Steelers roster right now. I forget his name, but Cameron Kennedy, who was a rookie and totally botched everything and got cut by him. Got chewed out by Arians. So we'll have to see their performance as much as just making it.
And I think it's unfair to sit here and say he has to play 10 years. But, I mean, we would expect him to play four. You know, I mean, yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is if he beats out Greg Warren for whatever reason and you know, he's your long snapper for the next 4 years – I mean, look, if he's the long snappers are cheap. So, you know, you could probably re-sign him at that point. But, I mean, if he makes the roster and he's your long snapper for the next 3 years, I think it's fine as long as he's doing a good job.
Right. Let me say this last thing on the long snapper stuff. The Steelers have to make a ton of cuts today. They signed their UDFAs. They have the draft picks. They got to trim the roster. If that candidate guy, that long snapper, is not cut, then something's up with Greg Warren, because that means they have three long snappers, which is not a thing you need at all. So keep an eye on Cameron Kennedy. If he's cut, then maybe Warren's okay. If he stays, something's got to be up with Warren.
That's a great point. That's a great observation on your part there. All right, let's wrap things up here talking about Keon Adams, a guy that, you know, we kind of was on our radar thanks to visits and all, right? An edge out of Western Michigan.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about him. I think he's a pretty good athlete that jumped well at his pro day, 36-inch vert, I think 10.3 or 10.4 in the broad, a pre-draft visit. And the Steelers were pretty light on pre-draft visit guys this year. Only two picks of the non-local variety came in for a visit. You know, Dobbs and Adams. Connor came in for a visit, of course, but was a local guy. So a little on the lighter side, so it makes sense for them to go with that type in the seventh round, someone that they know. Good production. I think he's got some bend around the edge. Some people have theorized he might move to inside linebacker, which isn't a terrible thought. I thought Feeney was going to be an inside linebacker, so maybe Adams moves there instead. So Arthur Motes versus Adams, though. If Adams stays outside, that's your battle for your last outside linebacker spot.
Yeah, and look, Arthur Motes, that's one guy. You know, David's been on William Gay. I've been on Arthur Motes as being the guy that you know, I don't think is a lock by any stretch of the imagination to make the final 53 in 2017. And if Adams, if Adams can give you some special teams contributions, something that Motes is not—that's not his specialty these days, you know, any longer because of age and everything else. Plus, you can save a couple of, you know, a little bit of money along the way as well too. So, There's probably an outside shot that a guy like Adams makes the final 53-man roster, but a lot of that's going to be centered around potential upside and special teams play.
Yeah, and that's the reality with all three remotes. I think he's still a good special teamer, but every year you go on your career, you get a little bit slower, you get a little more expensive, and all these fresh legs come in and compete for your job. So, you know, Moats has played on different phases of special teams, but, you know, a guy like Adams that's younger and more athletic and a whole lot cheaper, you know, could push him. So we'll see how this guy develops, and, you know, we'll just – I'll try to go in with a clean slate because I don't really know a ton about Keon Adams, and, you know, we'll see what he's got.
Yeah, we'll learn more about him in the coming days and weeks via breakdowns. Happiest man on the Steelers roster after the draft was completed is?
Oh, I wrote about Vince Williams and Ross Cockrell having confidence in them. So I'm going to say Vince Williams because I think he now has the knowledge that the team has complete confidence in him.
Yeah, I would concur with that. I thought there was an outside, you know, heck, I had Jared Davis going in the first round. It would have been it. We'll never know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been interesting if Davis was still on the board at that time. If the Steelers, right. You know, we'll never know, though. We'll speculate until the cows come home. Surprised they didn't take a tight end?
That's what I was going to almost say, Ladarius Green or Jesse James, to your answer. I get asked about that a lot. No, I'm not really surprised. We kind of came off that towards the end just because they didn't have any pre-draft interest in tight ends. I don't know if what that means for Ladarius Green going forward. It's got to be some level of short-term comfort, but I think it also speaks to their confidence in Jesse James, that if Green is not available, that they have James and you know, are confident in him to be able to run the offense like he did for part of last year. So I think it almost might speak more to James than it does Green.
I think at first it's obvious that they do have some sort of level of comfort, I think, in the health of Ladarius Green. Because, I mean, let's face it, if you would have drafted one in the first three rounds, we would be already have a post up saying, see ya. You know, to Ladarius Green. So I don't know what to read into that. Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin didn't give much info on the health of Ladarius Green, you know, ahead of the draft. You know, you look at their undrafted free agents. I mean, they signed a kid out of Pittsburgh. What's his first name?
Scott Orndorff.
Yeah, Scott Orndorff. That's not overly surprising. You know, they know a lot about him, but even so, he's going to be, you know, he's a fringe roster player at this point. So, you know, you got Grimble, you got Jesse James, you re-signed David Johnson to, what, a two-year deal. Keep your fingers crossed, I guess, is all I can say there, right?
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. Totally unpredictable, I think, for ourselves, definitely. And even the team has to be pretty unsure of how it goes. And no guarantee Green gets through the year. Any of these undrafted free agents, speaking of them, Dave, any of them do anything for you?
Yeah, not many of them. And short answer is really no, but we've been surprised in the past with these guys. I'm trying to pull that list back up right now.
Let me say this. Do the Steelers need some cash? Because they went local for 5 of the 9. I'll give them $20 if they need some help or something, Dave. It was a little weird that the Pitt guys and one guy from IUP in West Virginia, these guys aren't traveling for.
Yeah, but we know a lot of these guys that this is going to be an ever-changing list with these guys real soon. You know, Nelson Adams, an interesting guy, but undersized at 6'3", 287 pounds. I think the guy that sticks out to me the most on this list is Francis Callan. Out of Georgia Tech,
and more
of an athletic guy, right? With him, very inexperienced. He has the size and the length with him. So, once again, very. I'm trying to pull up what his numbers were, and I'm not finding them here. I know I wrote him up when the Steelers brought him in for a pre-draft visit. Wasn't he the most athletic of the two between him and who was the other one? Gimble.
Pat Patrick Gamble. I believe so. I'm going to pull up his numbers on NFL Draft Scout right now. At his pro day, he ran 5 flat, 31 inch vert, 9 in the broad, 7.13 cone, which is really strong for him. I heard and I read some stuff that he might move to offensive tackle, so don't be surprised if he's one of those conversion guys the Steelers have done the last couple of years.
Would you believe that?
Yeah, now there were rumors. Well, in the pre-draft stuff, they were floating out, local articles would say, teams might be looking at him as a tackle, and don't be surprised if he flips.
That's an interesting observation there, too, because, look, the team has done it a couple of times now, mm-hmm. And why wouldn't you?
He's a good athlete, so he fits.
And that's, that's the thing that stuck out to me the most with him was the fact that he was his size and the fact that he has some athleticism to him. Now, at 295 mm-hmm. pounds, he's going to have to get on the weight gain 3000 plan. But there's plenty of time for that. So that's the only name that really stuck out to me, Alex.
Right. Rush Rochelle is a pretty popular guy. Local high school was a big recruit coming out that I bounced around some. I'm not crazy about him. The one name I watched last night, I'll give you two. Ethan Cooper from IUP was a small school D2 guy, big power guy who got a combine invite. So, NFL had some interest as a whole. And then I watched last night that Nick, Nick Schuessler out of Clemson, who only threw 66 passes, backing up Deshaun Watson. Guy's got an arm. He's got a slight frame, but he zips the football well. Maybe he has to show some more touch sometimes. But I watched him against Syracuse and South Carolina State, where it's two games where he threw the ball a lot this past year. And he's got a good arm. He's got a little bit of mobility. He feels the rush pretty well. His timing is off. His accuracy is pretty poor. I was surprised that he was not a tryout guy. I thought when they first announced it, they just screwed it up and he was going to come in for a tryout, but he's an actual bona fide UDFA.
And there's probably a handful of guys that are going to end up being brought in for tryouts that we don't even know about. I think I identified maybe two of those guys this morning out of Duquesne, Wayne Capers Jr., whose father, Wayne Capers Sr., was actually played for the Steelers for a little while. He transferred from
Arizona,
was a cornerback for them. Had some decent numbers at Duquesne. 105 passes for over 1,800 yards and 18 touchdowns during his 3 seasons there. It looks like you start connecting these dots, and you can see why certain players are being brought in. UTEP tackle Jerome Daniels. It looks like he's going to be a tryout player for the Steelers. He played both tackle spots. I just quickly looked at some of his highlights at UTEP. And who coaches UTEP?
Sean Coogler.
And Sean Coogler was?
The former offensive line coach.
You win.
I'm also reading your article, which helps.
Is it chance he moves inside?
Yeah, that's what it's looking like. He's listed as a guard on NFL Draft Scout. He ran a 5.66 with a 1.94-10 split, 25.5-inch vert, 9-second 3 cone, according to NFL Draft Scout. So he's a lumberer, we'll put it that way.
I hear you. All right, and pay attention to SteelersDepot.com ahead of the mini camp, and we'll fill in the rest of the blanks as far as tryout players go. Any final thoughts on this year's draft, Alex?
Some people like to say it's awful, and I guess it happens every year. It's not the best draft ever, but first I think they hit their first round pick out of the park, which of course is the most important thing. We have to weight these draft picks. Yeah, I didn't like them taking a long snapper in the 6th round, but that's kind of inconsequential compared to whether or not you get your first round pick right, and I think they did. I think that they just got talent with Smith-Schuster, so even if you didn't feel like it was a great need, you just got to collect talent, which is how the Steelers win the draft, just because they get guys that stay on the team through the second contracts, and I think this guy will. I like the Sutton pick. I didn't love it, but I think it makes sense. I think the Steelers did well to know their scheme defensively and where they're going to, and finding players that fit into that scheme and making this transition a little bit easier. So, I'm not big into grades. I'll probably write an article today about what NFL.com graded this class, because people like to know that stuff. But I'm pretty happy with it. I'm not, you know, dancing for joy, but I'm not upset about it either.
Yeah, my initial thought, I'm somewhere in the middle, and I'm usually that. It's like me saying the Steelers are going to go 10-6 every year. I know this. I got to learn more about a lot of these guys, and you do as well. And that's what was going to be up content wise on Steelers Depot over the course of the next. We're going to be busy for 2 or 3 weeks here learning a lot more. So, you know, maybe in a month now we'll revisit and talk more about what we know and get a better handle of say, yeah, this is a little bit better draft than what we thought or a little bit worse draft than what we thought. So in the meantime, Alex, I appreciate you joining me on this Sunday. As always, folks can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com, find that donate button. That'll take you to PayPal to do so. Appreciate everybody for listening. It was a great weekend on the site. We certainly do appreciate all of your support. David and I should be back, I think, at it again on Monday. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.